Have you ever cared for a patient with acute pancreatitis and felt like you spent your entire shift just managing their pain and pumping them full of fluid? Were you so busy administering narcotics and spiking the next bag of LR that you didn't have time until the end of the shift to ask yourself, well, why does pancreatitis cause so much pain? Why do we give so many fluids? What's really going on with pancreatitis? I've definitely been there, and if you have too, you're going to want to hang around for today's episode. Because today, we are joined by none other than Nurse Mo from the Straight A Nursing Student Podcast. Nurse Mo is an experienced critical care nurse who's going to walk us through the care of a patient diagnosed with pancreatitis. Together, we will look at what pancreatitis is, what causes it, the pathophysiology of it, and how, even though it's considered a GI condition, it really bleeds over into so many other systems of the body. By the end of this episode, you'll feel confident in your understanding of this complex disease process, what to watch out for, and how to safely manage care for a patient with pancreatitis. So if you're ready to up your critical care skills, let's dive in with Nurse Mo. Welcome to the Up My Nursing Game podcast. My name is Annie. I've been a clinical nurse for 8 years, and I am curious. I use this podcast to address common clinical questions, share unique perspectives across the healthcare team, and cover what's missed in nursing school. Are you a nurse seeking to expand your knowledge and stay up to date with the latest trends in progressive and critical care? NTI, the American Association of Critical Care Nurses premier conference, is 2 short weeks away, but there is still time to attend. NTI will be in Philadelphia on May 22nd through 24th. I've honestly been drooling over their list of sessions on their website at aacn.org/NTI2023. A few of the educational sessions I'm looking forward to this year include pharmacology of heart failure, buprenorphine in the inpatient setting, and hyperglycemic emergencies. Go to aacn.org/NTI2023 or click the link in the show notes for more information about how you can participate in NTI 2023.
My name is Maureen. I also go by Nurse Mo. That's what most people call me. And what I do is I support nurses and nursing students by teaching nursing concepts and sharing tips and advice through my podcast, the Straight A Nursing Podcast, and through my website.
Nurse Mo is a critical care nurse with many years of experience in both the ICU and PACU settings. She also holds a master's degree in nursing education and loves working with current and especially future nurses to guide them along their paths and help them to become the most competent nurses they can be. She truly believes, as do I, in the mentality that as nurses, we are forever learners.
I worked in the ICU and obviously loved that, loved jamming on all the complex pathophysiology and the cool high-tech equipment. And what I really loved was just learning about all the cool stuff, right? And really diving deep into disease conditions and sharing that with other nurses and precepting nurses and all of that. So I took that love of teaching and started my website. So it's straightanursingstudent.com. About 4 years ago, I started podcasting. It just kept going. I'd hear from students how helpful they found the podcast and were utilizing it to help them succeed in school. And I thought, wow, I could do so much more with this. So then I made online programs to help kind of prep them for nursing school. And then you know, now I'm developing an app and all these things. So it just happened, I guess.
It's clear that Nurse Mo loves what she does and is constantly looking for ways to help nurses and nursing students along their path to nursing success. But now, without further ado, let's jump into furthering our understanding of pancreatitis. I'm excited today to talk about pancreatitis. I kind of remember learning about pancreatitis in nursing school and then not seeing it as I was on med surge for the first couple of years of my career. And then I saw it when I started floating down to the emergency department, but really solidifying my understanding of it when I studied for my PCCN exam. And I saw questions of pancreatitis come up over and over again. And I finally kind of pieced it all together. So I'm excited to kind of sit down and one go present it to the listener here in a comprehensive and easily digestible way.
Right. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. So let's jump into it. What is pancreatitis?
Okay. So pancreatitis, whenever we have the word itis, we are talking about inflammation. So it's an inflammatory condition and it obviously involves the pancreas. So pancreatitis can be, you can have acute pancreatitis. You can also have chronic pancreatitis. And what we generally see is that it's associated with other disorders. So one of the common ones is alcohol use. Another very common reason would be a disorder of the biliary tract. So there's some kind of obstruction. And then it can also be from medications. And then it can also be for, gosh, we don't know. That would be that idiopathic pancreatitis. So in a nutshell, inflammation of the pancreas. It can be acute or chronic, mild or incredibly, incredibly serious.
So now that we know what pancreatitis actually is, let's look closely at the disease process itself and what is occurring in the body by learning the pathophysiology of it. In order to do this, we must return to the basics and remember what the pancreas produces for our body.
So when the pancreas has those digestive enzymes, they can just kind of leak out of where they're supposed to be, and they start damaging that pancreas and causing all of that inflammation. It could be, you know, sometimes again, it's because of a medication. Sometimes it's because of the alcohol use. Sometimes it's because of an obstruction. So the enzymes aren't going in the right place because there's an obstruction, an outflow obstruction. In some cases, those pancreatic enzymes can even kind of leave, like go outside of the pancreas and get up into the lungs. And then we're looking at pleural effusions and acute respiratory distress syndrome. And that's what I would often see in the ICU, those really sick patients with ARDS from pancreatitis. And the other thing, obviously, is that the pancreas, you know, those beta cells in the pancreas are going to be secreting, I always get those two mixed up, your insulin. So patients will also have issues with hyperglycemia. So there's just a lot of physiological things happening with pancreatitis. So even though what you're looking at with the patient is a lot of that pain and nausea, there's a lot going on in the background. And then the other interesting kind of pathophysiological aspect of it is if that tissue is not getting well perfused, we're getting really inflamed, we're not getting enough of oxygen and nutrients, then that tissue starts to die off. And then we have a necrotic pancreatitis. And when that pancreas is necrotic, we get infection and then we get sepsis. So then you have a patient who's in septic shock with ARDS on complete and full life support from something that we tend to think of as kind of just like, it's pancreatitis, it's no big deal, but actually can have a pretty high mortality rate.
To flesh out the statistics on mortality rates here, mortality rates can range from as low as 3% in milder cases to all the way up to 20% in those with necrotizing pancreatitis. We can see that there are many things going on in the body when a patient has pancreatitis. So now we must be able to recognize what signs and symptoms to watch for. So let's find out from Nurse Mo what key assessments we should be doing. What does a patient with pancreatitis look like?
Okay, so when you, like you said, you saw it in the ER, right? And that is such a common place. Probably didn't see it on MedSurg so much because if they could treat them in the ER, they did, or they were so sick, they went to the ICU. What you're going to see on a patient with pancreatitis is a lot of abdominal pain. So doing that thorough pain assessment, and they'll probably be guarding their abdomen. And I would say the pain's generally more epigastric, more like upper, but it could also radiate around to the back. And then they could also, like if they're lying in their bed or their gurney or whatever, they may have their knees drawn up. That's kind of that classic, my tummy hurts kind of positioning. I will tell you a lot of times your patient with pancreatitis is just going to say it's a 10. My pain is a 10. They're not going to be messing around with trying to qualify between a 7 and a 10, right? The pain is severe with pancreatitis. So you're going to be assessing that. They may be vomiting quite a bit or really nauseous. And when you're talking to them, they might say, the pain started after I ate a bucket of Kentucky Fried Chicken or some high fat, fatty, greasy food, or after drinking alcohol again. They could be very chronically thin. So what you might see with these patients, especially if they have an alcohol use disorder, they could be chronically thin because of that and that malnourishment. They may appear dehydrated because of all the volume losses. So those are kind of those main kind of things. I think in very, very severe cases, you can have that colon sign or that Turner sign, which is going to be that darkish discolorations, but that would be like your patient that's so, 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 so sick, right? So more common, it's going to be nausea, vomiting, abdominal pain.
Colon signs and Turner signs often appear together when they're present in pancreatitis. Colon sign is a bruise-like discoloration around the navel, and Turner sign, also known as gray Turner sign, is bruising of the abdominal wall. Although these are not common, when they are present, it is a sign of severe, severe pancreatitis.
You will be assessing their blood pressure because, again, they could have that hypotension with that, fluid volume losses, whether it's intravascular from third spacing or from vomiting and decreased PO intake. Could cause the blood pressure to be low. Sometimes, though, that pain can a little bit mask that by having, a compensatory, a reactionary hypertension. That's not going to last forever, but it could mask it initially. With that, assessing their heart rate. So you're kind of just getting that full set of vital signs. So heart rate's likely to be elevated from the volume depletion and from that inflammatory state and the pain. The pain is just no fun at all. So you're looking at that, you're taking their temperature, anticipating that it could be elevated if there is an infectious process going on, if they're, roving into that, necrotizing pancreatitis state with that infection, or just from having extra fluid, maybe they got a pleural effusion and that's going to cause, the patients often have a little bit of a temperature with that as well. So assessing those main vital signs. And then you also want to look at their respiratory status. You've got a patient with a GI disorder, but now you got to assess their respiratory status because they could get a pleural effusion. They could be going into sepsis with fluid leaking into the lungs. They could be going into ARDS. So doing, getting out your stethoscope and asking them about shortness of breath, et cetera. And then one of my favorites, I don't think I've ever done this, but as much as it's talked about in nursing school and on exams, you would think everyone does it daily, is checking for a Chopstick sign, which is a way to test for hypocalcemia. Have you ever done it? Have you ever flicked somebody on the face to see if they twitch?
No. I have not.
I have not either. So there's Chopstick sign, which would be an indicator of hypocalcemia. And basically, that's the facial nerve twitching, right? So it's just you flick it basically with your finger and you stimulate that nerve and you watch for a reactionary twitch, which would occur in hypocalcemia. You know what I do? I look at their labs.
Amen. Thank you for saying that.
Yeah, I'm just going to go to the chart and check out their calcium level. As I was learning about pancreatitis, hypocalcemia is such a big deal because significant hypocalcemia can be associated with a higher mortality or a poorer prognosis in the face of pancreatitis. And then also another reason, and maybe this is the PACU nurse in me, that I care so much about hypocalcemia is that it can cause laryngospasm. And, working in the recovery room, it's like so much about the airway, and airway stuff scares the pants off of me, which is ironic because I work in a place where it's like super common to have airway issues. But laryngospasm, for some reason, super scary to me. So, of course, I want to know about it so that I can feel a little bit empowered when I'm faced with risks for that. So hypocalcemia, that is one of the kind of scary acute things that you would want to be aware of with your patient. So you could theoretically check for a Chopstick sign, and then you want to weigh your patient, right? You're monitoring their fluid balance with that as well. So those would be kind of the key ongoing assessment.
It's fascinating to me how pancreatitis, which is such a GI issue, bleeds over into respiratory.
Yeah.
And then
in a bad way. Like
in a really bad way.
Yeah.
And I think it's so important to have this solid fundamental understanding of pancreatitis so that you understand like, oh, this could lead into respiratory. I need to focus on that assessment as well.
And let's catch something early before this patient's on a ventilator. Like, could we do something to intervene earlier before they really take a turn?
Which
is always the goal, right? Always the goal.
Yeah. Yeah. And how is it diagnosed and what kind of tests would you expect to see ordered?
Okay. So probably some of the key tests are going to be the amylase, your alkphos, those kinds of things. Amylase and lipase and alkphos, those are all going to be elevated in pancreatitis. Other things that they're going to be looking at, so they may want to get an eyeball on the pancreas itself. So maybe a CT scan, which could show, you know, the organ is enlarged, meaning it's inflamed. If there's a cyst, you know, present that's causing the issue, they could possibly see that. They may get a abdominal x-ray to rule out other possible causes for their pain. They may get an ERCP, which I always love trying to say. So endoscopic retrograde cholangiopancreatography. I did it.
That's amazing.
I did it. That's why we just say ERCP. So they've got a little scope, a little camera that can go down and look at those ducts, which are often, you know, blocked in pancreatitis, and also maybe even do a little retrieval of something that could be blocking a duct while they're down there. That's kind of the cool thing about ERCP. It can be diagnostic and therapeutic. That's a real good tip for you nursing students. Mm-hmm. And then another one would be looking at a chemistry panel, monitoring for imbalances in electrolytes, mainly looking at calcium, which has a tendency to be low in pancreatitis, looking at white blood cells for infection, for inflammation. Bilirubin may also be elevated in pancreatitis, checking a blood sugar, which is likely to be elevated because, again, the beta cells just aren't doing their thing. So I think those are kind of the main ways that a patient would get a workup for pancreatitis and then like to continue monitoring them. You're, of course, going to keep an eye on the white blood cell count. You're going to keep an eye on their chem panels. If they are hemodynamically compromised, like we just discussed, maybe some hemodynamic monitoring, that would be more in the ICU setting where they're, you know, they're really, really sick.
So what about treatment? As nurses caring for a patient with pancreatitis, are we simply managing the pain or is there more we can do to help them along their road to recovery? Let's find out.
Okay, so you wanted to talk about treatment. So you mentioned fluids. So anytime you've got a patient who is fluid volume depleted, let's replace those fluids so that we don't have bigger problems down the line, right? So get that good-sized IV in there and let's start giving them some fluids. We're going to keep them NPO most likely because we want to give the pancreas a little bit of a break. Let's let it chill for a bit because obviously, you know, the digestion process is going to stimulate the pancreas to release more enzymes that are just going to start digesting itself. So let's not do that. So we're going to be NPO. And then for that nausea and that vomiting, a lot of patients, I would say many, many patients will get an NG tube. And that is to decompress the bowel, get that gastric distension taken care of, remove excess gastric juices, and I have to say, and maybe you're the same way, putting in an NG tube probably up there in my top three things I hate to do because it's so uncomfortable for the patient. I hate causing people discomfort. Like if it's something quick, like an injection, no problem. We're done, right? We're in and out, we're done. But it takes a bit to put in an NG tube. It requires a lot of cooperation from the patient, probably a nurse friend, and it's unpleasant for everyone. So, but the upside of it is if someone's severely nauseous and vomiting a lot, you get that NG tube in there, get it on some intermittent low wall suction, and the relief is just like, wow. So then they're glad they did it, but never force it. Can we just say that? Never force an NG. If you're meeting resistance, stop.
NG tube placement can be tricky. We'll talk about a few quick tips here, but if you're interested in a more in-depth discussion about NG tubes, listen back to episode 1, where I interviewed a general surgeon about NG tubes.
So giving them something to sip to help them swallow will help the NG tube go down, having them like bend their chin towards their chest at the appropriate time, that can help. Have a towel, have an emesis basin handy. Have a friend there who speaks in a very calm, measured tone. You know, you don't want people that are going to be high anxiety about it. You want to keep the team really chill. And I have even seen, and I think one time the MD ordered this was some like numbing spray. Like a hurricane spray. Yeah. And that kind of helped, but it didn't help so much the nose part, but it kind of helped.
Maybe like, tamp down on the gag reflex.
I think that's what it did. It tamped down on the gag reflex a little bit. I don't know. Yeah.
And anyway, sometimes I'll put the NG tube in warm water to make it more flexible, pliable.
Yeah, that's a great idea. Mm-hmm. Good tip. Okay, so fluids, NG tubes, and PO. The other big one, and you already mentioned this, is pain medication. So what did you give the guys in the ER, the patients in the ER? Was it a lot of morphine?
Dilaudid.
You went for the big guns. Okay,
yeah,
so
big guns.
That makes sense, right? Dilaudid, it just works. So students will probably see in their exams that the medication of choice is meperidine.
What is that?
Exactly, right? Exactly. In the books and then in life. So meperidine, it is a analgesic, and it's I'm doing air quotes because I know y'all can't see me. It's the med of choice because it causes less spasming of the sphincter of Oddi. And that is like some kind of like random thing you might see on a nursing school exam or an NCLEX type question. But in reality, we don't really use meperidine because it has a dangerous byproduct that is neurotoxic. So we don't use it.
Is there another name for it?
Demerol. Yeah. And we use Demerol in the PACU occasionally for shivering, because patients will shiver as a result of the anesthetic gases kind of working their way out of the system, and we'll give meperidine for that. But you may see it as the pain med of choice in pancreatitis because of this less spasming of the sphincter evader. That may be old. You know how it takes a long time for textbooks to catch up? So that could be more like an old school modality. What we basically do is instead we go with morphine or we go with the Dilaudid, something that's really going to get in there.
What is the
sphincter of Oddi? It's part of that bile flow. It's controlling that bile flow. And if it spasms too much, I think it's going to obstruct off the flow and maybe like
further worsen the pancreatitis. Yeah, so that makes a lot of sense.
There you go. See, when you just look at a little anatomy, sometimes it all comes together. Okay. Other things, the patient may get medication to reduce gastric acid production, like an H2 receptor blocker or a PPI. They may need antibiotics, again, if there is some kind of infection process happening, and they may be getting insulin because they're hyperglycemic. So those would be some of the key types of things. They may get an ERCP. Again, that could be therapeutic if there's some kind of obstruction. They could take out, you know, widen something or remove something that's causing an obstruction. There could be surgery maybe needed in some cases.
So these are the main areas of care to be aware of when caring for a patient with pancreatitis. We covered a lot today, so let's do a quick review of the key points.
So your key takeaways are you're looking at a patient with a lot of abdominal pain, nausea, and vomiting. Like, that's the short version. Of course, other things could be going on, but we're just talking about the main highlights. You're assessing pain, fluid volume status, and their respiratory status. And why not flick them on the cheek? Just go for it. Just flick them on the cheek. See if they're hypocalcemic. Take a look at your labs. Yeah, because they're gonna be some imbalances, right? There's going to be electrolyte issues. There's going to probably be, you know, the amylase, the lipase, the bilirubin. Those things can be elevated and looking for signs of infection and hyperglycemia. For treatments, you're replacing fluids, keeping them MPO, popping in that NG tube with grace and compassion, and giving them pain medications.
As we mentioned at the beginning of this episode, there can be many different causes of pancreatitis. Some of these causes may be due to personal lifestyle choices. Let's hear what Nurse Mo has to say about how to handle these types of situations with grace and compassion.
If I were going to like talk with someone about how you approach your care of someone with pancreatitis, and I would say this is with any patient, right? Like you got to leave like your judgment at the door. And you're going to take care of a lot of patients who make choices and do things in their life that you 100% don't agree with. And sometimes it's about things like drugs and alcohol. And sometimes it's about things like just how they care for their chronic illness, right? So many things that you would probably say, well, I wouldn't do that. And this could have been avoided. And sadly, a lot of things can be avoided, but that's not our place to say. That's not what our job is. That's not what we're there for. So even though pancreatitis is often and very often associated with that chronic alcohol use, just don't make assumptions about that, first of all. And even if it is, you know, you're treating all your patients with compassion, you're treating them with grace, you're treating them with competence, right? And you have to look at it from the standpoint of not only is this guy right here dealing with a very painful condition right now, he's also battling an alcohol use disorder that I'm sure they wish they weren't. Those kinds of things just kind of come into your care of these patients. So they don't need judgment. They need compassion. They need very competent care to help them toward that path of wellness to whatever that is for them. So let's do what we can to educate and care and make patients our partners in their care as much as we can.
Before we go, I wanted to give you the opportunity to talk about your podcast and some of the really amazing resources that you have for nursing students.
Okay, happy to do that. So my podcast is Straight A Nursing, and you can find that basically anywhere you get podcasts. And then I also have a website, straightanursingstudent.com. And it's not, I mean, even though it's Straight A, it sounds very student-y. And yes, I am very focused on students, but I have plenty of nurses who listen to the podcast for a little refresher. I listen back to it when I know I'm like, oh, I haven't thought about pituitary tumor removal in a while, and I might have a patient with that coming up. So I'm going to go back and listen to my podcast episode on that topic. So, you know, lots of nurses listen to it as well. And that is just a great way to, I know everybody's super busy, right? To study and learn kind of while you're doing other stuff, right? I listen a lot in the car. I listen while I go for walks. I listen while I'm unloading the dishwasher, like all the time. So that is a really great resource. So Straight A Nursing podcast and website. And then I also create online programs to help nursing students get prepared for nursing school and then succeed in nursing school. So studying and taking notes and getting organized for nursing school, how to do dosage calculations, you know, how to tackle NCLEX questioning, things like that. So just kind of these underlying foundation concepts. So that's Crucial Concepts Bootcamp. And then I have a MedSurg program called MedSurg Solution, where I teach MedSurg concepts kind of like this in just a very short format so that they're not getting all the fluff they don't need. They're just getting the stuff that they do need. I love audio learning because it just frees you from having to sit.
Yeah. And it allows you to really maximize the time that you're driving or you're doing chores in the house.
Yeah. And it's just another way, like another modality to learn. So like if you read something and you hear it, that's just going to make it stick even more. And listeners can find links or, you know, information about all this just by going to straightanursingstudent.com. It's all there.
I love it. All right. Thank you so much for taking the time to be here today.
Yeah, it's been super fun, and I can't wait to have you on my podcast.
All right. That's it for today. Before I go, I have a quick favor to ask you. If you feel that this podcast has added value to you and your career, please, please take the time to rate and review it. This helps me get the word out about the podcast so that I can continue producing practice-improving content for you. Until next time, I hope that you have upped your nursing game.